3, 2, 1, go!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, the podcast from three Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. These are Cassian Fridays, released again on a Monday. I'm sorry, life happens. It's, you know, deal with it. And we are talking about episode 6, The Eye. And what a feast for the senses that episode was. But before we get into that, we would like to introduce our guest for today, La Star Wars Tia herself, Kari. Bienvenida.
Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, guys. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, my God. And we're so excited to have you.
Yeah,
yeah. ever since, like, we saw, like, that... could we call it viral? I would say viral, like that, your viral response to certain toxic elements of the Star Wars community on the Twitter. I was just like, okay, I must know.
Immediately in love.
And yeah, I was like, when can we be friends? And when are we doing the podcast?
Absolutely, yes.
Slowly but surely. And the day has come. So thank you so much for joining us. We're very, very happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored. Thank you.
You're our first time guest, so like this is the first time that we've been talking to you. Most of the guests that we've had for Andor have been like repeat guests, so like a lot of like our audience have, you know, we've done their interview a little bit, so like, we've gotten to know them. So like, why don't we, let's do that here before we get started a little bit, and like you, our little interview segment before heading into Andor. Like we know, like you're obviously the queen of Twitter right now, or the auntie of Twitter, right?
Since, like, La tía de Twitter.
You're also on TikTok as well. So why don't you tell us a little bit, not just like your Star Wars history, right, but also like how you've been coming up here, like within the social media community. So you're an icon at this point.
Oh my gosh! Listen, you're making me blush. No. No, but
I think it's the truth.
I've always been a proponent of being kind to other people and letting people be happy and stuff and not ruining, like not raining on their parade. And I just kept seeing these people like being so nasty to others, just trying to enjoy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I gotta say. And then, you know, I can be sarcastic and smart mouth. So I was like, let me use this for something good. You know? Yeah. And, you know, and then from there, I mean, you know, I do, my TikTok is, I started off doing like little silly, just cosplay skits and stuff, and talking about Star Wars. But then it started getting into more, you know, conversation and commentary and stuff. And it took from there. And there was this one video that got me like there on TikTok
was the video.
Yeah, it was me when Boba Fett came out. And people started calling him fat. Oh, well, now Boba Fett, when Mandalorian came out, the second season. And they're like, oh, Boba Fett. And I was like, what? Excuse me? So I went and did a video and I just started like regañando. I started barking at everybody. You guys complain about everything. You complain about this. You complain about that. I'm just calling everything out. Like everything that they like, you know, the ridiculous stuff that they complain about. And that's where I got my tía from, because somebody in the comments was like, oh, that's it. You're my Star Wars tía. I'm like, yes, I am. I was like, Star Wars. I'm like, and I have to make it Latin. So, you know, there you go, Star Wars tía.
Excellent.
But yeah. That was a little history there with the name and stuff.
And we're not too familiar with the TikTok universe. So like what has your experience and how has it been different, right? From now that you're like on Twitter as well. Like how has like that Star Wars community on TikTok been for you versus like how things can get on Twitter? Because we know Twitter gets very spicy sometimes. But since we're ignorant on the world of TikTok, why don't you educate us a little bit on that? Yeah.
Oh no, the Star Wars fandom never lets you down when it comes to being toxic in any platform. like in any platform. Okay,
that's
like
both hilarious and sad at the same time.
It is. It really is. I'm like I said. That's why I, you know, all of my call outs on TikTok was because, oh my God, the things, you know, that some of these people say and the way they come at people are so disrespectful and disgusting, and you know, the way they treated certain, you know, actors from the shows and the movies and stuff. And you saw that all on TikTok. And then I came on Twitter. I'm like, oh my God, these people just don't, it's the same thing you know, that you are. But actually like on TikTok, it has slowed down a little bit because we're like actually been trying to just kind of push them away, like with the call outs. But then we also like, all right, you could talk to yourself now. Like, we're just going to concentrate on, you know, us talking about what we like and the shows and people doing their cosplays and everything. But of course, you know, there's moments of peace. And then something happens in Star Wars with the show or something. And it's like, now what's going on with Andor, the commentary about, you know, criticizing the show or using the show to put down another show. And it's like,
oh, that's a big one. That's a big one.
Yeah.
We can talk about that once we get into Andor, because it's interesting. Like, you can't have, that's why we can't have good things, right?
Nice things.
Anytime we get something that's amazing. And I let's be honest, like, I think maybe all the shows haven't been hitting at the same level of, like, you know, 10 out of 10. But, like, for the most part, I think that we are getting a lot of really good content. Good.
Yeah. And I mean, every story and every show just hits different with different people, you know?
Yeah.
It's how you attach to it, what the emotional attachment that you have to it or to the characters and stuff. Like, for me, Kenobi is still number one because of my attachment to, because I'm a, like, you know, Vader, Anakin, super stan, you know? Simp. Thirsty. So it has a very big emotional significance for me, the show. And, but with Andor, I'm loving it as well. And I can see that there's certain elements from Andor that have been better than how they did it in the Kenobi show, but it doesn't ruin the experience of Kenobi for me.
Right.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can still subjectively really enjoy something that objectively isn't that good. Why do you have to rain on somebody's parade that I really enjoyed this, even though it's maybe not a 10? Leave me alone in my enjoyment. Thank you.
Well, especially when you've also enjoyed the other thing as well. It's just like, it's not binary, you know? You can all things. Well, not all things. But you can like other things and not have to make it a competition. Like,
exactly.
Especially like right now, you know, we've had She-Hulk, we have House of the Dragon, we have Rings of Power, we have Andor.
So many things.
And I've enjoyed them all at different capacities, obviously.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't mean that I have to say, Andor is better than...
Not all of them have to hit the same way.
Shows.
Yeah, exactly. People were trying to compare, like, Andor to She-Hulk. I'm like, how do you compare those
They're
two?
Completely different things. So different.
One's a comedy,
like, so
and this is a spy thriller.
Comparing
Superbad to the Jason Bourne movies. It's
like
apples
that
and
makes
oranges.
No sense. Yeah. Because they were like, oh, how is it that She-Hulk has the higher viewership than Andor?
It's different.
First of all, we don't know how the viewership numbers work, because Andor is hitting with a lot of people, you know? Yes. And, you know, sometimes people are not able to watch it on a Wednesday. They have to wait until the weekend.
Right.
And some people are able to watch She-Hulk on time. Like, it's all different things, you know. Doesn't mean that the show is just better than the other one just because, you know, of viewership stuff, you know.
I think the final thing I wanted then to ask you about before we start, you know, discussing like this incredible episode of Andor is about obviously representation, especially now we're in tomorrow's the final day. Well, once this episode comes out, it'll be over, but as we're recording this, tomorrow's gonna be the final day of Hispanic Heritage Month, and obviously we are all big proponents of representation and equitable representation, and not just Star Wars but all media, and like, with Andor, obviously, we have Diego Luna as the main character, you know, keeping his accent and, like, being the glorious Diego that he is. Obviously, we also have Adri Arjona. So we have, like, a lot of, like, Latinx, Hispanic representation in the Star Wars universe right now. We also have Rosario in Ahsoka. We have, obviously, Pedro in Mando. So how do you feel that and let's make this global. Like, I want to know about like all media and your opinion, but particularly Star Wars. How do you feel like Star Wars and Lucasfilm and Disney are doing in terms of like Hispanic and Latinx representation in its content? And is it good enough or could it be better? What are your thoughts on that?
No, I absolutely love that. You know, obviously we haven't had any type of that, any type of representation like that in Star Wars since like ever, you know. Original trilogy, there was nothing. Prequels, definitely nothing.
Jimmy Smith, but that was it.
Oh yeah, Jimmy Smith, that's it. Yes, absolutely. But that's like really the only person in. And but we couldn't, Jimmy Smith, even though he was Latino in the you know, as the person playing it, the character, we couldn't really relate to him in any way of, in the Latin of the way of the Latino could relate to him, you know. I mean, I know that with Pedro Paz, like with the Mandalorian, you know, we still don't, I guess with the Mando, the whole thing of him having to struggle and, you know, having to, you know, do what he can in order to survive and stuff, we can kind of relate to that as Latinos, because, you know, the immigration experience is always a hard one. It's just about surviving and stuff, you know, taking care of your family as best you can. So I think in that way we could kind of relate to Mando somehow, you know,
even though he was a lot behind the mask. So it was kind of hard to tell for a long time. So.
And doesn't have an accent.
Yeah, exactly. But I think with Diego Luna is the person that we are finally hitting that, you know, that big stride with. And I love that he actually, he was able to keep his accent. And and I know he wanted to do that. That was his thing. Like, he said that he wanted to keep the accent, and because of how, as immigrants, when we go, like, you know, in the show, how he had to go to another planet and stuff. You can tell that he's not from there. And again, that's one of the biggest experience of any, you know, Latin and Latino immigrant, is having to go somewhere else. And people like, oh, they're not from here. Just when you, you could look a certain way, you could be, you know, you could look like a regular white person and stuff, but as soon as you open your mouth and start talking,
it's like, oh, un poquito, right?
But that's one of the interesting things that, like, I think it, some people don't realize, because like it happens to like me and all the friends of mine and all our people from Puerto Rico like go here to the States. It's just like, oh, you don't look Puerto Rican. It's like, well, what does that even mean? It's like, yeah, there's black Puerto Ricans, there's Afro Puerto Ricans, like there's ones that look like me, there's ones that have green eyes. It's like, we're, you know, we're colonialism, baby. Like, you guys came to us and like and now
we have all this plethora.
We look like
now we're everything. There's not one thing that we one that we look like and that we're supposed to look like. It's just our cultural experience, right, that makes us who we are. So it's just like to pigeonhole us into like a category, I think it's unfair. I mean, but it's also ignorance, right, from the place. So all we can do is try to like raise that awareness and keep doing what we're doing to talk about representation and have our voices be heard to whatever capacity we can. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that Andor is doing through Diego and through Cassian's character, of like trying to not only like highlight the Latino man or Latino character, but also the Latino experience.
The
really powerful thing about Andor, that it's not just a spy thriller, but it's a spy thriller rooted like in a Latin man's experience through displacement and colonialism. So that being said, I always talk about Andor a little bit before we go into episode 6. What have been your thoughts so far from episode 1 through 5? I mean, obviously, from what I've gathered, you're enjoying the show a little bit.
Just a little bit. Un poquito nomás. Absolutely. From the first episode, I mean, I know that a lot of people, their complaint was that it's such a slow burner and the pace and stuff like that. I think what helped me, or, you know, many people, was that they gave us the first arc, 3 episodes. That really helped a lot with really kind of grasping what the show and the story was going to be like. But see, I can't, I don't have that complaint. I like a good story. I like taking that, you know, I like when they take their time, you know, showing us, you know, the story. It doesn't have to be all the time. Something has to happen. Something big always has to happen, you know? And I like that they took their time with it in that way. That's my personal preference, though. I mean, because, I mean, you know why? Because all the other shows have always been, like, so fast action. That's majority of them are always just, like, just go and go, 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 even with the movies and stuff. So now we're actually here taking our time with somebody, getting to know their story in a very detailed way. I've absolutely loved that. And then just the whole tone of the show being so different from the other ones, like, that's like the main thing, because the same thing was with Rogue One is very different from any of the other movies that we've had. And I think that's important, because some, you know, you when you change the formula a little bit, it reignites, like, okay, oh, shoot.
Reinvigorates, you
know?
Just,
yes, yeah, exactly. It you know, the interest and the spark and stuff, like, oh, this is something different, but it's still Star Wars.
I know.
Exactly. And especially the most important thing, I think, is because now we're getting the story of the everyday regular people that were forgotten in the background with all the other shows and the movies and stuff, because it's always been about the Empire, the Force, the Jedi, the Sith, you know, the big things in the galaxy. And now we're getting to experience, you know, well, now I can relate even more to
people that don't have superpowers.
Exactly. The no superpowers, the ones that had to really suffer the consequences of what happened after the Empire took over. So,
excellent. I mean, I totally agree with everything. And now we've, like, reached the final part of, like, the second arc, so to speak, with the Eye. And we got to finally see the heist in action, like, all the consequences and heartbreak and losses that we expected to see, but still didn't want to see. And then some little snippets into, like, what's happening in the other parts of the galaxy. So, and I got my Eye of Aldani light going on, because I'm still feeling it.
In memoriam.
In memoriam. My sweet, sweet boy. Let's start with first impressions. And Annie, what did you think of this episode? I mean, did it meet your expectations?
It exceeded my expectations.
Tell us why.
I was from the moment that they even mentioned the Eye of Aldani, and we got a little bit of snippets of it, like, in the trailers, I was so excited to see how they were going to portray this on the show. And it was just incredibly mind-blowing. So we can get into visuals later, but that was just insane. I mean, visuals and sound, because I wasn't expecting it to sound the way it did either. Right. So that was completely unexpected and insane.
Yeah.
But we had gotten so many unexpected things from Nemec in the last episode that I really loved how we started with that conversation between him and Cassian, and how he's trying to understand what Cassian's role is in the rebellion within everything that he's already understood. And then as the story goes on, and you're just worried about Nemec the entire time, because you know he's probably not going to make it, but you still hold out hope the entire time. And there's so much tension, because as we've said before, the fate of the only one that we know is Cassian. We know he makes it all the way to Rogue One, but we don't know the fate of any of the other ones. So I think it was perfectly framed and a really excellent combination of narrative and character development and sticking to the story of that character, but then adding those elements that some people were complaining about, that, oh, it's not Star Wars enough and there wasn't action enough. And this one, if this one made anybody unhappy, really, you suck and you're not watching the show that you should be watching. You're watching something else. So first impression, there we go.
Yeah.
¿Y qué pensaste, tía?
Oh, no, I completely agree with everything you said. I love the tension. Like, the tension,
I know,
is, like, so gripping. I was stressed out the whole freaking time. From beginning to end, I was stressed out. I don't think, like, we don't get that type. We haven't gotten, well, I haven't felt that type of tension from beginning to end with any other show or anything, because the stakes were so high the entire time.
Yes.
You're like, oh my god, now Belle. Oh my god, now Sansa. Oh my god, now, you know, like, everybody was doing
everybody
something that was, like, you know, we were like, oh my god, what's gonna happen to them now, you know? And and again, they're taking their time and they're showing us exactly every single step that each of them are taking, you know, taking their time with what they're showing us, what they're their part in the whole heist was. And I guess that's what kept that tension alive. And then, of course, combining it with the whole visuals and the music,
the music is so good. Yeah.
It just made it so much more emotional. And, you know, you really immersed into what was happening in the episode. That was just beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's interesting because we had like the big action set piece of the heist. But for me, like one of the most tense scenes, honestly, was like the end. When like they go to the hospital planet, it's just like, oh, what's happening?
What's gonna happen now?
And then you see, like, is Cassian gonna do the right thing when he's talking? I always forget the name, so I apologize. When he's Skeen. Talking to, Skeen about like what's gonna happen. Oh, should we go and just take? We split the money and we can go. And it's like, weren't you a true believer of the cause? He's like, no, man, I was just here. And then, you know, Cassian shoots first, and I'm just like, what is happening? What is happening here?
Especially at that point where you're like. Technically, we're sure about four people at this point that have survived. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to this four people? And then the way it sounds like, oh, two, that's it. That's all we get. Yeah, two people survived. Well, actually, Cinta survived because we see Cinta walking away.
Yeah, yeah.
She wasn't away, there, so we didn't know about her fate yet, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Which is something we have to say to Disney and Lucasfilm. It's like, hey, don't imply that their girlfriends just go all in. We don't just do a little hand touch.
The little stuff. Hand thing. Yeah, like, they should have kissed. Like, that was the moment for them to kiss. Like, you don't know if they were
going
to
kiss.
They didn't know they were
going to kiss each
other. If Star Trek can go full queer, so can Star Wars. So it's like, just stop. Just embrace.
You're already saying that they're sharing sheets. There's the implied getting pissed off when Vel didn't tell her about Cassian. Like, they're clearly in a relationship. If you're, you know, hinting at it already, just... goodbye kiss it's not
that was I honestly it, that please. Was very unrealistic of them not kissing because that's the first thing you're going to do because
it was life and death
gonna
and
go
of course
so here's to them reuniting and you know getting the appropriate screen time for the
things that they must and appropriate reactions to them finding each other alive
it's something I mean I think it's something symptomatic about Star Wars. They've always shied away from romance and this is like,
close and then
it's a Star Wars can have romance too. It's not just Han and Leia, you know, and Padme and Anakin.
And Padme
we can have other characters actually fall in love and actually have healthy romantic relationships.
Yes. And I've seen a lot of people like bring that up that one of the things that Star Wars is missing is that romanticism in it. You know, like you can still have a very, you know, a badass woman moment and stuff like that. And still, you know, we still love, you know, like just because
we can be badass and nurturing at the same time.
Exactly.
Look at Hera. Yes. Why are the awesome women that are nurturers stuck in the animated series?
We could bring this to, you know, to real, you know, live action. Absolutely. Yes.
It's that, but I think it's a symptomatic thing of what Disney's doing because I was reading like, and not to go on a tangent, but that's what always happens here. We go on tangent. but I was reading an article about the new Snow White live action remake that they're doing. I forgot the actress's name. She's a Latina actor. But she was saying like, oh, this version of Snow White won't be like the original one. Like Snow White's going to have agency and she's not going to be falling for any man. And she's like, I mean,
why not?
Okay, but
you can have agency and fall in love.
And be on your own terms. Like,
yes.
She-Hulk did it. Hello.
I know.
Especially when she was talking to Kevin.
Hey.
Wait, bring back.
Bring back my Matt Murdock. Boy toy
like,
here.
Dude, woman has her needs. Like, but you can't, it can't.
I know.
It can coexist, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That you're just gonna have us be single,
like being a badass is the equivalent of like, well, and it's for women because with men like they're a badass, but then they get the girls like, oh, it's my prize, I get to have my romantic attachment because I'm a warrior man, but as a woman, like they can't coexist. So it's time to like break those taboos. Obviously, we can have all different types of things like. A romantic stories, but we can also have romantic stories. And there was this was a moment where we could have had like something there, especially not just because it's appropriate for the characters, but also in terms of like just doing appropriate representation for that group.
Yes.
Right? Because we don't see that in Star Wars, and it's about time. Anyway, coming back. So that final scene to me is just like even more tense than the heist itself because it's like what's the fallout, what's the consequence, and like now going into the next episode and seeing, you know, Mon Mothma in the Imperial Senate, which, oh my God, the Imperial,
we were the waiting Senate, for that, and it was so good.
The Senate never looked so good. Oh my,
oh my God, that the visual there too is just so amazing.
And ooh, her, parapelo.
And her there just not being able to do anything with empty chambers, and like talking about the what's going happening with the Gormans, and it says, and we know, you know, we know that's going to be the reason that she leaves the empire.
The empire, yeah.
And then going back to Luthen's, you know, Luthen's Den of Antiquities, and him just being like, okay, the rebellion's begun. It's like,
and just laughing.
It's like, it's like the, I love that
he just starts laughing. Yeah. And it's such a different reaction, because one of the reasons that Mothma wasn't getting, I mean, it was probably half empty to begin with, but people were actively leaving because of the news of these rebel attacks. So it's kind of like both sides of the rebellion kind of clash against each other because there's not enough communication. So she's trying to do this and is being interrupted by Luthen's scheme because it finally made the news. So she's super upset that she can't get anything done. But then you see him actively laughing, like, we finally got on the news. We did something. We are relevant. So,
but I also like the symbolism. The emergency meeting, right? At the ISB. It's like, things are going to happen now.
It's big. But I also love the symbolism with the whole Senate apart, because at this point, the Senate is just a farce. It's just like a facade, you know? Because no matter what's being said there, if nothing is going to get done unless the emperor wants it to happen, you know? He's just giving them the idea, the illusion that they do have some type of say and power.
Yeah.
Right.
That's all.
That is true. Yeah.
That's all it is, you know? And I like that when we see the whole Senate just empty and Mon Mothma just talking basically to herself.
That's and people just like on their cell phones, like, we don't care, you know? That's like, what they were doing. They're like,
you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
But it really reminds, I mean, but that's the, I think the great thing about this show, and we've talked about it in previous episodes, it's like how all the political commentary is not in subtext. It's all like there for us, like laid bare for us to see, like, oh, this is what we're talking about. It's not about space wars, you know? It's not about space wizards and spaceships and Jedi and all that stuff. No, this is real, real stuff that we're talking about. Because when I was seeing that, like that Imperial Senate scene with Mon Mothma, just reminded me of things that happened both in the Senate here in Puerto Rico and the Senate and in Congress here in the States as well. Mm-hmm. Because like sometimes when you have like la vista pública, how do you say that in English, Nani?
Sí. The public view,
when you have like public viewings, and it's particularly like for Puerto Rico or something, congressmen don't show up, it's always empty, it's just like when it's like
they're falling asleep, you see them sleeping
on their cell phone, so it's real, like it happens in real life, and it kind of shows the apathy that the people that are in power currently show to like the people that they're supposed to be serving. So like it's something that's just, it's a mirror, right? Like the show is a mirror, like the current events. And I think it's wonderful because as much as political as like the prequels and the original films were, like they were always under the veneer of the fantasy, you know, it's very binary. It's like evil empire, good guys. Blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So like all of that political commentary was there, but it was very subtext and you just kind of like had to like find it. But Andor's just like, no, here it is. It's here. Boom. Here's the mirror. Look at it. And once you look into it, you'll see the reflection of everything that's going on.
Especially with a character like Mon Mothma here, that we know that eventually she becomes the leader of the rebellion. But right now she's kind of like on the funding side and still actively trying to be part of the solution in a nonviolent way until the point that she eventually gives up. And it's like, nonviolence doesn't work anymore. We have to actively rebel and be part of an actual revolution. So seeing the evolvement of Mon Mothma so far has been unexpectedly amazing. Like when we saw her and, you know, her outfits were fire and everything, I was like, we're going to get so much good Mon Mothma. But we got an even better Mon Mothma than I was expecting. Oh, yeah. And I expect it to get even better because I think now, you know, the next arc, we're going to get all these repercussions of this actual threat that the rebels are starting to present.
Yeah.
I want that and dinner party.
With Mon Mothma, I like that the way that they're showing her home, that she has a family, her husband, her daughter and stuff. Like now we know that for her, she's gonna end up losing so much. Mm-hmm. She's really sacrificed so much for the greater good, you know? It's not even her husband, because
but her daughter. Yeah.
But her daughter, regardless of how her daughter might be treating her right now or the way, that's still her child. And you know, most likely she's going to end up losing her child because her child's going to be like, whoa, my mom is in the wrong, you know,
yeah,
obviously
she's an extremist and
Which
is, and there's already resentment there to begin with. So
exactly. And the father is like basically flaming that resentment.
Of course. And kids on my side. Here we go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Terrible man.
Let's not talk about him.
Yeah. Cause we get into that all the time. It wasn't even the episode. Let's get
angry. I said all I need to say about that.
Yeah. Until he shows up again.
Until he shows up again, it's like your stupid haircut and your stupid attitude. we're gonna throw hands. We're gonna throw hands.
It's on site.
I mean, kudos to that actor. It's like, hey, you deserve your paycheck.
Because you're really making it believable.
Yeah. But anyway, I kind of want to talk about, because we talk obviously because it's Diego Luna and we start from this very kind of Latinx representation angle that we'd like to do, but we got to see the Dani people this time, and it's these displaced people. I love that they kept their language without you doing the subtitles as they did with the Karani. And we see these new displaced people, and when you hear the Imperial man talking about them in such derogatory and horrible ways, almost like they're animals, like they're so easily manipulated, they fight amongst themselves, we don't even have to worry about them. And it's so historically based on how the conquerors speak about their conquered peoples. And I think it's so well done that we're getting it in a lot of different planets. It's not just like in Canary and Ferrix. We've now seen it in a third planet as well. So what do you think about that so far? Let's start with you, Tia.
Oh, no. Again, that's just, you know, like you said, it's not just Latin representation there is any, you know, country that has had to deal with, you know, colonization, with people coming and interfering with their affairs, especially in such a way that is so violent. It's just heartbreaking because you hear the way when they were talking, and I was just like, I've heard that type of conversation about Latin countries, about our people, and it just makes you feel like, to this day. Oh, absolutely, to this day.
Like we're less than human somehow.
Especially when the whole caravan was coming from Central America.
Yeah,
the things that people were saying, that they were bringing all these diseases, and it's their fault that we're getting sick in the United States, and they're they're dirty, and I'm like. So it brought a lot of that sentiment out just seeing that, because it's so close
to the reality.
It hit home. That scene like made me angry because of that, because I'm like, we live that, we still live that, like that's something that still happens like to this day and age, like you were saying. And like when the hurricanes hit Puerto Rico, like some of the discourse that I saw sometimes on the Twitter of just like, oh well, why don't those people just move? It's just like, why would you just live in a place like the amount of like vitriol, you know, and dehumanization that and otherization, right, that people do to our community, is just like, it's disgusting. It's things that you would have expected to see from the British Empire, back in the olden days when they were talking about their colonies, and it's something that is pervasive to this day, and it's really sad to like have to still have that conversation. And the way that they framed it was just like, it's just perfect in that sense. And especially for me, one of the poignant things about that scene was like how they framed the Aldani, right? Because then like all the garbs that they were wearing were very reminiscent of like Central and South American cultures, and they were speaking a different language, and all of these things that came together and then tied into like that manifest destiny and like US colonial BS was kind of like, oh, okay, well, like, anyone that keeps trying to deny that this show is trying to say the things that it's saying
in your face,
they're not watching the same show we are.
Very delusional.
And then just the way they were also make like kind of dismissing their beliefs, this is something. This was a very important event for them, for the Adani people, you know.
And in their sacred places and religious sacred and stuff.
And again, the same thing just brings back how they've, you know, so many cultural aspects that we have lost along the way throughout the years because of colonization, because of, you know, all these things. Going back to, you know, the indigenous Native American, I mean, not in, the indigenous with their residential schools, the way that they took the kids, they took away their culture and stuff like that. It's just, I love that there's so much to talk about when it comes to stuff like that in the real world, you know?
Yeah.
And it's interesting because then we see like the different levels though, even within like the empire, because we see, I forgot the what was his name?
Cyril? Or
No.
Gorn?
J-Hold, like the commander. I was talking
about
all those comments.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He's like dismissing like all the religious aspect about it and whatever the Eldani, blah, blah, blah. But when you look at like the lower level, like Imperials that actually have to be stationed there, like they're actually like, oh, if you have to be stationed here, well, at least you get to like see this.
Yeah.
Like such an
actually excited
thing.
About it.
So, like,
yeah.
Even there, like you see that disparity of like how you like get to like value certain things, which is which is interesting because when you're in power, like nothing has value for you because like you have everything, you can take whatever you want through whatever means necessary, and the people that don't have that power, like the day-to-day soldier, like they still have the ability to like to some extent like empathize and see the beauty in some of these things. So like maybe that's something that hopefully all the people at the Imperial base will see and be like, oh, maybe we should defect and help the Eldani kind of reclaim their land so that they can see, you know, this majestic spectacle, which, oh my god, what a beauty. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I think the Eldani are so done, because you saw when they had the meeting with the Imperials, how did he frame what he said? I need a plan for interplanetary something. So he meant that they want to go do something big. Like
they were gonna like break down that entire dam and their entire to build some kind of infrastructure, and then they were already talking about, we've already told them that from now on we're doing some Imperial celebration down where they are. So they were already taking away, you know, the last maybe sacred festival that they had. They're taking that away. They're taking their last sacred place, and it's, you know, sooner or later they're going to take away their language and all the rest of their customs as well. So I think they're
not how they're going to retaliate, how the Emperor is going to retaliate against them, because they're
now
gonna
they're going to have a mining accident.
Always happens.
No, but like to your point, I mean, it's something, not to keep harping on like talking about Puerto Rico, but I mean, we're Puerto Rican.
No,
always talk
of
about
course.
But it's something, it's what's happening like now, you know, it's like with the displacement of our people, you know, it's just like, oh, let's start having like law 20 and 22 to have rich Americans come here and like buy our
tax
property,
exemptions,
and
buy our property,
you know, your
so that,
beaches and stuff.
Private
modern day colonization. I mean,
it's not quiet, you know, it's just like, oh, let's raise prices now, like on all the highway tollways. So, and it's just like, you make it unattainable and impossible for the locals to be able to live in their own land. And, you know, and like, so at some point it's happening. It's the displacement is crazy. And like, oh, let's be all the nice areas. Let's like repossess those lands to just do tourism there and like destroy natural resources. It's like, Puerto Rico is like an excellent example of how like Puerto Rico's all done, like in many, many ways. Yeah. Because like,
it's so sad. It's just kind of, you have to laugh about it at this point, because it's just, and I do love that Andor is being very real about it. And
very in your, like you said, what William said, very in your face. Like, they're not sugarcoating it, they're not hinting at things. No, it's just, this is what's going on, you know.
It's amazing. Like that's why like I'm loving this show so much, because it's like hitting like all the notes that like I've been wanting it
all
to hit
cylinders
in terms of like the political commentary. But let's talk about the heist in proper. And you know, there were many, many things that happened. There was one particular loss that we saw coming, but it still hurt like hell. So I don't know, like let's start with you. Like, how did you feel about that whole sequence of the heist and the losses that went there? Like, did the people that you expect to die? Were there people that you wanted to die that survived? Like, what were your thoughts on like all the consequences of the heist?
Oh man, this is, I mean, we, of course you're gonna expect, because we already know, we never see him in Rogue One or mentioned again and stuff, right? So we already know that the losses are gonna be there, and it's Star Wars, so they love to hurt us anyway.
Yeah.
So it's gonna happen regardless. But I would have loved that at least, because somebody made a commentary how the ones, the basically the only person of color that survived was like, you know, Cassian and Senta.
Yeah.
And then they killed off the other, you know, the other two black characters and stuff. And not only that, but those are the two characters that
defected. Yeah.
That defected, and, you know, they didn't get to enjoy what they did and to fight against what they, you know, what they left behind in the Empire and stuff. And I would have loved for them to actually, at least a little bit, you know, you could have killed them later on, but
yeah, survive at least a couple more episodes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Right. But, it's like the curse of Rogue One. It's like, if you're in something that has to do with Rogue One, you're going to die.
That's you're done. It's done. Yeah. But Namek, regardless, even if we knew that it was going to happen, of course, it still hits so bad because he's idealist. Yeah, exactly. It wasn't even because somebody was shooting at him or anything. It was just
like a random shot.
Yeah, it was just
he got crushed. He got crushed by the cause, literally.
By the cause, yeah. Somebody said on Twitter, like, he literally got crushed by capitalism.
Yes,
like,
yes.
The money that crushed him, you know? And
I saw someone say something dumb on the, sorry, I have to say you said that. And I saw people are idiots sometimes, like, so just, you know, people like to nitpick and say the dumbest things ever. It's just like, just think about what you're saying. Someone says like, oh, well, these characters are stupid because they didn't remember to just like secure all the money, so that wouldn't happen.
Dude, you're running away in the middle of a life or death situation.
You see the same scene I saw. Like, did they have time there? We gotta go.
We gotta go. They're shooting at us. We gotta be out. There's a time limit because of what's going on outside with the eye. And you can't, like,
people, I tell you, just people that are determined.
Secure your cargo.
People that are determined to just not like anything or see it without any critical thought. It's just like, no, I made up my mind to not like it. So now I'm just going to find the things to start criticizing.
That's crazy because that there's people that actually hate watch stuff. Like, how, why?
Yeah.
What is it that you're so miserable in your life that you just want to watch something just to find stuff to talk bad about?
Yeah.
To criticize.
To criticize it. Like, that's the whole point.
Sorry to interrupt. You were saying.
No. And just the fact that him being the one that gets crushed when he's the one with the bigger ideals, you know?
The true believer,
The true believer, like, he just.
And the truly intelligent one. As well,
yes. I said that he would have thrived in Naboo, and Padme would have.
Oh, see.
Oh my God.
He would have been given all the resources to, you know, create all these inventions and design all these buildings and have all these treatises, and he would have been the mind of the ages.
Yes.
But
yes,
here we go.
Absolutely. But and that's just showing us another reality of stuff, of wars and all these things that happen in real life, that we lose so much.
Yeah,
the people that could
do great things, end up having to be soldiers or end up being dead because they don't have the resources
or the opportunity, and they're forced into something that is not going to, you know, endure
at least. Well, hopefully his manifesto endures because he gave it to Cassian. But
I think it will. I think that's what because Cassian is still not fooling. Like, he's still, you know, about surviving, what I have to do for myself. Yeah. Even though it's just crazy, God, how I love that they're showing these two sides of Cassian. Because even though he's being selfish, he's also being righteous, like what he did with Keen. Like, he killed him, whatever.
He's being, like, opportunistic, but at the same time trying to do the right thing. And I think Nemec realized that right from the beginning. Because even when Nemec keeps finding out, like, bad things about Cassian, I think he intuitively found something honorable in Cassian and kept believing in him. And he's the one that he met for the least amount of time and is the person that he entrusted with his manifesto.
Yes, with his manifesto. And I think that's what's gonna obviously complete, because we already, I think him, Cassian, hearing these stories from these different people, why they decided to rebel, kind of like, it's staying with him, you know, like, oh shit, okay. But I think once he starts reading that manifesto, that's just going to be like, they killed Namek. And he's going to get mad.
Right.
He's gonna get so mad. Especially after the connection that he has made with Namek, because Namek saved his life. He was almost shot, and Namek is the one that shot the guy that was going to kill him. So there was a connection there. And you can see during the heist that there was already a protective element over Namek, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and that scene was, as you were saying, it was so rife with tension. Like, I mean, from the beginning, when you don't even know if Vel's going to go ahead with it, like, call it, are we going? Is it not going? You know, mm-hmm. when they first, you know, the engineer pulls out a gun on them. So you think it's going to go wrong right off the bat. And then the fact that they got called in, regardless, even though they try to call off all the hubs, you see the TIE fighters go out in the middle of the eye, which was just, and I love TIE fighters, and to see them again from the inside. Oh was my God, from the inside, so yes.
And just the way they were, the color of the eyes was shining on them, like the whole visual mm-hmm. thing was,
it was genius. Really
stunning. Yes. It's one of the, I think the great thing that like all new Star Wars is doing is like giving you things that you've seen before, but a little different.
And that
little difference just makes it like it's like as you're seeing it for the first time. Because we've seen TIE fighters since like A New Hope, but like now we're seeing them in a completely different environment with all the greens and the shooting stars and the colors and like the visual effects and the sound. It's just
like when that the moment when they came and he swooped low on them.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
terrifying.
That first time I jumped and I was like, whoa, that was so like, good. Oh, and I've always loved the way that TIE fighters sound, but they've just elevated that into something very just like right visceral. You feel like you were there. It's like you had to hide, you know. Yeah, so. Yeah, yeah. And then they made that with the eye too. The first time you see one of the falling stars, I was like, this is not falling stars. This is way above and beyond this. The first time you saw one and the sound that accompanied, it's like, I wasn't expecting it to have, you know, this much impact on all the senses and for it to be such a smorgasbord of gloriousness. So when they're actually
gloriousness, I like that. Yeah.
So when they're actually, you know, flying away and you're freaking out because Namek is crushed, and you have no idea what's happening, but then you're kind of overwhelmed by the, again, gloriousness of how it actually starts to make the shape of the eye with the horizon and everything. So you see where the naming of it comes from. And you're still thinking, oh, maybe Namek will survive it. He made it in. Okay, he got crushed, but he's still breathing. We pulled him out. We gave him adrenaline. Somehow through all of that, because he couldn't even feel his legs, manages to get them the coordinates on how to leave.
He did good.
That out of the whole episode, that was my favorite part of the whole episode, because first of all, Namek is using his last strength of life to make sure that he does his job and gets them to freedom and helps them out. And just the emotional of like, climb, like it's just so
and
much.
And then being like, what are you talking about? I'm going into this, just listen to me.
Climb and then dive and all of that happened at the same time with what you're seeing outside and then the music on the other side. It was just a whole bubble of different emotions happening at the same time. And just, and then, you know, I'm sure, I don't know if you probably saw the comparison of when K2SO in Rogue One told them climb. I was like,
why are you doing this to me? Stop making me cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, stop. Yeah.
And then you keep on holding on to hope, because as soon as they're trying to have that fight, do we go to the hospital? Do we keep going? And Cassian doesn't even hesitate. It's like, tell me where to go to the doctor. Yeah. We're going. And I was like, thank you for doing the right thing, Cassian.
Yeah, when that happened, I'm like, oh, our boy's gonna make it.
Look, he's going to doctor.
I was like, we did it, like Star Wars.
And they're operating on him. And
it's like, I was like, Mr. Quadpaw there, like, it's like he's got four hands, so he's gonna.
And I was like, yeah, that's like having two surgeons at the same time. We're good. He's gonna be fine.
Yeah. And then she's like, ah.
It's like, and it was a double whammy, because they're hitting before that, they hit us with Skeen being an asshole.
Being a traitor, who was the first one who suggested going to the doctor because he was looking for an opportunity to get away with all the money. What an asshole. He advocated for Namek's survival just to leave them all behind and fuck them.
I have a question for everybody here, because like at that point, Cassian asks Skeen, like, oh, what about your brother? And then like he replies, I don't have a brother. Do you think that what he meant was like, oh, they killed my brother, so like I have no brother anymore, or that the whole story was fake? And I was like, I didn't have a brother.
I think the whole story was fake.
I agree with you.
And that really hit with Cassian, because he's out here looking for his sister. He has a real story of his sister having lost his sister, wanting to find her, and then this one over here just making up shit so he could take an opportunity to, like, you know, for himself. Oh my god.
And he's is that he was the one that was trying to call out Cassian for being a dick. He was the one that had ulterior motives the whole time. Right.
Yeah. But so I think he was doing that just to see,
to like, scope him out.
It's like, wait, who's this new person that might put a wrench, you know, throw a wrench in my plans of, you
or
know,
or be an ally in me leaving everybody behind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So he was, I think at first it was just, he was worried that, fuck, this new person is like going to mess up my plans of, you know, what I'm going to do with after the heist and stuff. Yeah. But then after that, he figured out he was a mercenary,
it's like, we're
and that they were both in that school thing or
prison,
whatever.
Like they imprisoned. Yeah.
Then from there, he was like, you know, I think we could get him to do, you know, be on board with my plan and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And obviously after that, we get the scene of like our sweet darling boy Namek, you know, being covered in the white sheet.
Walk in and you're like, oh, he made it. And it's like,
no. And then they're like, no, but that's the thing. They gave us that little bit of hope.
They couldn't, it's so mean.
Have him covered when he goes in. No. They got to show us, like, know he died.
And then Quadpa just like, you know, it's like, I tried.
And then he goes in with the gun. And it's like, it wasn't my fault. Don't kill me, please.
But I wanted to talk about that scene because obviously we already talked about it a little bit and we were talking about him casting the manifesto. And like at this point, I would like do a heartbreak and be like, okay, what are we expecting in the next episode? But I think we can like mix that in right now with like what this means for Cassian. So, because I was thinking, as you guys were like discussing what I was gonna say, Diego, for me they're the same person at this point. What Cassian's state of mind is gonna be like for the series next. And in my mind, like, I think what kind of makes sense, I want to hear your guys' opinions, like, he's gonna take the manifesto and he's not gonna read it yet, he's gonna be like, whatever, I'm done with this. But I think he's gonna go back to Ferrix and he's gonna go back to Bix, and when he comes back, he's gonna be like, oh crap, like there's some, the Empire's here now. Like, I just left this imperial colonial thing and I came back to Ferrix expecting just to go back to my regular life. And now my regular life is gone because the Empire's here again and taking over all my stuff. So I'm just like reliving this again. And Bix is going to be like, hey, you idiot. Okay, we have to fight. And that's when he's going to like read the manifesto again and be like, oh crap, my sweet boy was right. I need to join the fight in earnest. But that's just me spitballing based on like what you guys were saying, which I thought was like excellent. So what do you guys think is gonna, how is the manifesto and Cassian's journey gonna go as we move forward in either the next episode or the series going on as a whole?
No, like I agree with what you said. He's like, again at this point, he's still about survival and just doing what he has to do. Probably right now he's also thinking about his
Marva,
mom Marva, like getting back to her to make sure she's okay. Yes. And of course Bix, you know, trying to get to Bix, make sure she's okay, because he knows that it was he left a whole mess when he left Ferrix. You know, so that's probably his number one worry. That's his number one worry right now for sure, you know. And maybe I'm gonna use this money to try to get them out of the cup planet and, you know, go somewhere safe and stuff like that. Again, it's still going to be about that just looking out for himself and the ones that he loves. And but then he's going to see what's happening with the Empire now full on, you know, crushing, like, you know, just like being there full force in Ferrix. And he's going to be like, oh, nah, you know, what's going on? Nah, they're being, F this shit. let me see what Namek has to say about this. What can we do about this? You know, he's going to start realizing that he can't just sit on the side and just be fighting for himself and just his, and then another thing to add is about his him looking for his sister. Like, right. That's still there, you know? And he's going to have to realize that he's going to have to make that, you know, a lot of sacrifices, one being not being able to, you know, keep on with the search for his sister, unless they do that in the second season and somehow it all intertwines together. Stuff, you know? Yeah. But yeah.
Nani, what do you think?
I actually don't think he's immediately going back to Ferrix, because I think he will have, now that he has more money, so he has more access to resources, I think he'll do his research and find out that it is occupied now and he's already a wanted man. So I don't think he would want to bring trouble onto Marva and Bix's neck. True. So I think he would either try to go and find some allies maybe that he made when he was journeying with his mom and his dad before, because we know they were doing things before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or he might try to continue on the search for his sister, which is what got him on the whole journey to begin with. And now, again, that he has more resources, he might try to make new contacts and try to find more access to her. So I think we are going to make it to Ferrix eventually, but I don't think it's going to be in the next arc. I think we're going to see a lot more from Mon Mothma and Luthen having to do with the repercussions of this rebel actual, you know, being acknowledged, because Deirdre was already like on the tail of things are happening, and now she will have evidence that, look, I was telling you that this is happening.
Was right. So
I think there's going to be some acknowledgement of Deirdre being on the right track.
Cyril's
going to join forces with Deirdre, probably.
Because he's going to be because he's obsessed with Cassian at this point.
Yeah. So now he's going to join in at some point. So I think it's going to start that active manhunt for Cassian now that we're going to think maybe that he was involved with this. And I don't know. I think we're just going to see maybe some new characters, and maybe during his travels, Cassian will get bored and start reading through the manifesto and start seeing all these things that maybe he's thought about before but hadn't wanted to acknowledge because his main focus was survival. But now that it's gone beyond that, because he has to admit at this point that it has gone beyond that. And he had from the beginning a little bit, even when Nemec would say to him, oh, you're just going to take it. Do I look like somebody who's just taking it? Am I just doing it for the money? This is a life and death situation. I'm doing it for the money, but there's other elements behind this. So I think we're going to see more development before he goes back to Ferrix, but we'll see. Yeah. I'm ready to see what happens next arc. I'm enjoying it so much.
We still have a lot of Anders to talk about. And that's one of the cool things I think that they've done with the marketing of the show. Like, all the trailers so far, like, have only shown us up to now, basically. Mm-hmm. And we have seen snippets of like Saw Gerrera and like stuff that are obviously
we don't know in what context at all.
But like, not a lot. So like, everything moving forward is just like new territory. So like, now everything's gonna be like, okay, it's unexpected.
What's the next thing that's gonna happen?
So it's really, really, really exciting. But as always, I mean, we could always be talking about this for the longest time. there's just so much to talk about, but unfortunately we have to wrap it up for today. Mm-hmm. Until next time, when we talk about episode 7, The Force Awakens. I mean, whatever they're going to call it. But before we leave, Star Wars Tia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, guys. This is awesome.
Why don't you share where people can find you on the socials? I know you talk about other things beyond Star Wars. I know you're a big Lord of the Rings and Rings of Power fan. So if you want to plug anything that you're working on right now so that people can find you.
Yes. So Twitter and TikTok is my name is Star Guarstia, and then Instagram is Kari, K-A-R-I Skywalker. And yes, I talk, I'm a huge nerd of everything, you know, Marvel, DC, Star Wars, of course, House of the Dragon, Rings of Power, and all fantasy and sci-fi and stuff. So you guys can kind of find me there, all types of different content, silly, a lot of simping and thirsting, and commentary and calling out the toxic bros and toxicity whenever I can. So
please continue, because not only do you do that, but you do it in a way that's like fun, refreshing, but still an awesome takedown. So it's always a beautiful thing to see. So please.
And still actually respectful.
I try my hardest not to come out, because my New York will come out so quick, and I've really learned how to, you know, come out in a way that it I won't be stooping too low to their level. But it's very hard. They make it very hard sometimes.
They make it almost impossible sometimes.
Absolutely.
But that's all we can do, just like call it out when we see it, but still try to be like a, you know, a positive force, and like try to like, you know, be advocates for constructive criticism, because no one here is saying that like we don't not enjoy things sometimes, because some things just don't hit the mark. And that doesn't mean that we can't, even the things that we do enjoy, that we can't look at it critically and be like, oh, maybe that didn't work or that didn't work. But that doesn't mean that we have to go all toxic incel, you know, energy here. We can, we can be respectful and like still be a force for good. Just like Star Wars tries to be a force for good, but we just have to help help it be better, because we can always be better. And there's no finish line to improvement. It's always
room for improvement.
It's always a
constant room for
siempre.
So again, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for first time here with Triad. Definitely not the last time.
No, definitely not.
We have Bat Batch coming up, and that's gonna be, you know, there's gonna be a lot to talk about.
And we love a lot of other nerddoms that also.
And we have a lot of nerddoms to talk about. So
We focus on the Star Wars, but still.
Listen, I'm here to talk about anything. Anytime you want to, you guys want to have me on,
awesome.
I'm here.
Excellent.
So well, anyway, sure.
Yes. So, la Star Wars tía. Thank you so much for joining us. We will let you know next time. And I would love to, you know, dedicate this episode to our lovely boy Nemec, in memoriam. As
for one
episode. Sadly, he was having trouble sleeping, you know, at the beginning of the episode, and Cassian told him that, you know, he will sleep when it's done. Yeah. And now he sleeps with the angels and with all of us that love him in our hearts. So
in our hearts, yes.
Nemec, sweet dreams. And your manifesto would be spread.
It's like Sarah McLachlan's song. It's just like, you know, it's like in the arms of the
arms of the We will definitely spread his message far and wide.
Yeah. Yes. We love you, Nemec. So until next time, we are Triad of the Force. Thank you for joining us. You can find us anywhere that podcast can be found. Just search Triad of the Force and you will find us. So just like, subscribe, comment, let us know if you like us. Let us know if you hate us. It's all good. Just
hate watches. You know, as long as we get that engagement.
Hey, listen, the views. They could do clickbait, so can we, you know?
So can we. Yeah.
So until next time, may the Force be with you.